Hi, I'm Jeff, and I'm a therapist.
And I'm Tyler, and I'm a patient.
We're going to talk about trauma, healing, and everything. Everything is traumatic. Are we on?
I just hit the button. We are on. Thank you. Good evening. Good night. And good morrow. Welcome.
We don't even know what time it is. This is Jeff Snell. It's the first time I've given my last name, so you can probably find me on Google.
I'll go ahead and dox myself too. I'm Tyler Broadway, and you already know the name of it. Tonight, today, and this morning, we're going to talk about living in a simulation, getting that feeling that we're living in a simulation. We're also going to talk
about... I'm not sure it's a feeling anymore.
I think it's a reality.
We'll talk about some evidence of the simulation.
We'll talk about some glitches in the matrix here. We'll also touch base on some maladies. Someone's toe is hurting.
Yes. It's like the evangelist used to say, one of our listeners' toes is hurting, or one of our hosts' toes is hurting. Hold the toe against the phone or wherever you listen to your podcast. If your toe is hurting, we'll try to actually take that pain away from you.
Yep, we're going to be toe mediums this episode. And then we're going to talk about movies that just fucked up movies.
Yeah. First of all, we want to do our shout outs. We always start with our matron of honor, Tiffy Stallsworth. Tiffy believes in aliens. We have to tell her, sadly, there are no aliens
because they're simulated.
But if I mean that, it's just too easy, you know. I mean, that used to be the thing. It's like, oh, there's got to be aliens. I just think it's just like, no. I mean, it's just too simple.
Yeah,
it's just no aliens.
It's too easy. It's too easy for there to be aliens now. Conveniently. Like, this would have been great news to know in the 50s, but no, we're finding out now when the world's on fire and everyone's fucking burning.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's just a distraction technique. But
Tiffy and the whole Stallsworth clan, thank you for listening to the podcast. It means a great deal to us. We would probably stop doing it if you guys stopped listening.
Yes, definitely. And we are understand there might be a listener in India. And we're very pleased with that. So I love curry and I love Indian food and culture. And so we are very pleased if we have any foreign listeners.
Yeah. If you're listening from India or if you're just using a VPN, don't be a coward. Let us know so we know exactly where you're listening from. Don't.
Yes. We will not harm you. We're not going to come after you. I'm pretty lazy myself. So I'm not going anywhere unless it's a smorgasbord is available.
Right. Only if there's a smorgasbord there. And speaking of smorgasbords, let's go ahead and just do like a skier through some of these other ones. I want to give a shout out to Seth Young. Thank you. Jacob Boyd. Yeah. Thank you. Vivian. Thank you. Brandon, if you happen to be listening while Vivian is listening, thank you for accidentally listening. And who else? Sandy, thank you for listening. Ken, thank you for listening. Janet.
Ken.
Go ahead.
I was just chanting Ken's name. Ken. Who did you say Ken. After Ken? Ken?
I mean, I made up a name at that point. I don't think I know a Janet, but Janet, if you're listening, honey, thank you.
If there is a Janet listening, we love you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great name.
Janet. Damn it.
I love you.
I love you. All right. Let's fucking cut the crust off this shit sandwich and get the show rolling. Jeff, we're living in a simulation. Is that right?
We're living in a simulation. I feel like, you know, I wasn't 100% sure, but I mean, come on. Look at the news. The oceans are boiling. There are presidential candidates being arrested pretty much weekly. Hurricanes are coming. Things are on fire. AI is controlling the world. we can't afford to eat and live. It's just, this has got to just be a joke, right?
Well, if it is, this is the worst episode of Punk'd we have all collectively have ever experienced.
You know, it feels like almost like one of those Practical Jokers things that just keeps going wrong.
But I mean, just because there's bad things happening, does that mean that like it's so bad that this can't be real, or does it feel too surreal to be real?
It's, you know, it's like the layers, right? So I mean, okay, so if any one of these things was happening, or any two of these things were happening, but every time you look at the news, there's something insane happening. Okay, there's about a hurricane is about to hit Florida, a major hurricane. Mm-hmm. There's stuff on fire everywhere. Everywhere there's fire. Seas are boiling. People are just going into stores and just taking stuff, just like flash mobs of criminals. I'm not even going to call them criminals. They're just people that are taking things. It's just so many things all together. And the Barbie movie is the number one movie of Warner Brothers all time.
That right there can't be real.
There's no way. There's no way a movie directed by a woman could be the top Warner Brothers picture of all time. Come on.
Well, Jeff, those are some very compelling arguments. I've always been intrigued by like people saying that like, oh, we're living in a simulation. Oh, this isn't real. None of it's real. The Matrix kind of like goes into that shit too. It's just weird because I feel like it's like our way of dealing with all the shitty things happening, you know, like it's almost a way to like, I don't know, make it make sense or at least escape it.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, do you ever just like think, I mean, do you ever feel like you're just in somebody's imagination, or all this is just your imagination and we're just asleep dreaming?
I feel like I have a tough time telling what's real and what's not. So it I guess that's just kind of the state I'm in, is a limbo of like, is this reality? And if it is reality, why is it so strange?
Yeah.
Like, I kind of feel like it's like a goddamn David Lynch movie. Like, it's
operating exactly
on dream logic.
Yes, we are in a David Lynch film.
It's what it really, it is what it kind of feels like. And I think it's interesting. I think it's neat. I mean, it definitely offers like like I mentioned, an escape.
Or instead of a simulation, maybe we're just, there are thousands of alternate universes and we just happen to be in the suck one.
We're in the darkest time.
I mean, there's some place where everybody's like happy and everybody has enough food.
I believe in the multiverse theory. Like there's surely there's a universe where Hitler cured AIDS and.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the good trade-off. We No, it's, I mean, it's not, but.
There's a universe, there's a multiverse or a parallel universe somewhere where people have healthcare and don't like have to start GoFundMes because they can't afford their insulin. Mm-hmm. We're in that one. We're in the crazy one.
We're in the darkest. We're not in the one where people, Jeff. That's what I was trying to say, man. This is the darkest one, or is it?
Maybe there's a darker one, right?
That gives me the hope that, like, yeah, it's shitty. This might be a dark timeline, but surely it's not the darkest.
It's close. I mean, we're in the top five darkest timeline.
You think so? Top five?
I think we're in the top five.
What in your head would be the darkest?
Oh, man. I mean, maybe a couple more fires. I don't know, man. I'm not sure how it could get much more dark.
I mean, what if we were in the timeline where there was no Diet Hope?
That's bad.
Like,
if we didn't have the ability to laugh and to do this podcast and to goof on things that are crazy, that would be the worst timeline.
I think that would be the worst timeline.
If we were not able to use satire and humor and sarcasm to actually sort of make ourselves feel better or entertain each other in some way, that might be the darkest timeline.
Yeah. I think so too. Like, and I've mentioned this at least on like maybe someone else's podcast or just talking in general, but laughter is the best sound. A human laugh is the best sound I have ever heard in my entire life.
I'm going to pull a quote out of my back pocket from the Reader's Digest. Mm. Laughter is the best medicine.
Oh, God, I knew you were going to say that.
Does anybody remember the Reader's Digest? Anybody ever have a Reader's Digest? They had jokes in that puppy.
I had Uncle John's bathroom reader.
Okay.
Which is kind of like informational and funny.
Yeah.
But did not have Reader's Digest. I did not.
So my parents took, and that's I think what you used to say, you took the paper or I take the paper. Mm-hmm. They took two magazines. One of them was Reader's Digest. The other one was Guidepost. And now you understand my childhood.
Oh, what's Guidepost?
Guidepost is a Christian magazine that has like inspirational stories in it.
Oh, okay.
It's not bad. I mean, they're like happy stories. They're like trying to be positive stories.
Right.
I mean, Reader's Digest had like a book, but like they took all the, like they took every third word out of the book. So you could have like, okay, so it's Jaws, but it's only 20 pages. So you could read Jaws, but you're getting only the part of it that is like edited way down. So they took out like any character development, any of that stuff.
Oh, they took out fucking
they took the shark out of it,
they
basically.
They took the shark, they took the speech out.
And then they also had books that you could buy that were Reader's Digest versions of books. And so it would be like one book, you know, like how a book would normally be like 200 pages. Mm-hmm. Well, they'd have four books in the 200 pages.
Oh.
And so they were Reader's Digest versions of the books.
I wonder what the Reader's Digest version of it was, you know, or what it is like. Like, do they take out the weird child gangbang in that for the Reader's Digest?
Yeah. Yeah, they take out the, you know, speaking of weird child gangbangs, we were talking a little bit before we got on here about weird movies. And I was telling you about Crash, which doesn't have a child gangbang, thank God. But Crash is based on a Ballard novel, I think. And I think Ballard was a writer maybe in the 50s, 60s, 70s. I'm not sure. I've not read Ballard. Mm-hmm. But Crash is basically about people that get off. It's a fetishized cars and fetishized injuries that come from cars.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. And so I think that's, I don't really want to say a whole lot more. It did have an NC-17. It's a Cronenberg movie, which means it's got all kinds of body fluid and body kind of horror in it because that's what he does.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also it's an incredibly dark, but also sort of a beautifully filmed nihilistic film. Okay. With one of the best endings, I think, of any movie ever.
Okay. And you said this movie was right up my alley.
You're going to love it. If you can. It's got an amazing cast. It's got Holly Hunter in it.
Oh, okay.
I think it's got Rosanna Arquette or one of the Arquettes. It's got James Spader in it.
Okay, didn't this movie win like an Oscar? Didn't it win like Best Picture or something? Or am I
No. Okay, so there's two versions of Crash. There's the Oscar-winning Crash that is a derivative kind of, I don't know. It's sort of like the white savior kind of movie, you know, where it's just like, oh, black people are great, but they couldn't have done it without that white guy.
Okay, like the hell
kind of thing. I don't remember, but yeah, it a movie called Crash One. This is the different Crash. This would have more likely win the Palme d'Or kind of thing from Con. You know, the edgy kind of movie. It's an NC-17. It's very sexual, very violent, very dark and nihilistic. But a pretty good movie. It's like a feel good movie if you like nihilism. If you don't want to wake up in the morning.
So what's the because he also did recently, his latest film was Crimes of the Future, which was like...
I thought Crimes of the Future.
And from what I understand of that is that it was that body modification is like sex.
Body modification is the new sex. Yeah. So it's about changing the body, manipulating the body. And what was happening is people had extra organs. And they would do surgeries to remove it. It's a pretty messed up movie. Not as good as some of his other work, it's a lot of his themes of like extreme body mutilation. But we see that, you know, people like getting their ears like sharpened or their teeth sharpened or whatever. The whole idea is that the new sex is basically surgery. Body surgery, body modification.
Which, I mean, I'm starting to just think at this point is my boy Cronenberg just don't like sex. Or he's just into some very specific things.
Well, he's Canadian.
Oh.
And I think that explains most of it. Yeah. Yeah.
I get you.
So we're talking about disturbing me. If we're going to stay on the Cronenberg thing, a movie that I will not watch again is called Naked Lunch, which is based on the Burroughs book, which I've not read. And it's a very, very disturbing movie. It's a very, I mean, Burroughs was a drug addict, drug user, heroin user, and the book is just homoerotic, and it's all about these monsters. And I think didn't he shoot his wife accidentally while they used to play like whatever, you know, they put like a apple on her head and he'd shoot and knock it off, and then he ended up shooting her in the face and killing her.
I've never saw Naked Lunch.
No, that's what Burroughs did that in real life.
He did that in real life.
His wife.
That sounds about right.
I mean, he wasn't trying to kill her, but he did end up killing her.
So I only know two things about Burroughs besides being like very influential in like the punk scene of
the beat 60s. Thing. Yeah.
So I only know two things about him. And one of them is a quote. So the first thing I know about Burroughs is that the band Steely Dan named themselves after a dildo in Naked Lunch.
Okay. All right.
That's the first thing I know. The second thing I know is the quote of his, which was, "I thought a punk was someone who took it in the ass."
Okay.
Those are the only two things I know about Burroughs. But I'd like to read more and get it. I mean, I've wanted to read Naked Lunch.
I think you would like the movie Naked Lunch.
Okay.
I found it hard to watch. It's like a drug trip. It's very surreal. It's very disturbing. I found it sort of emotionless, which it probably was meant to be.
Right.
And it may have been the time I saw it, but I found it distasteful.
Yeah.
It was still a well-made movie, but I think it was meant, you know, Fear and Loathing, how Fear and Loathing sort of moves from sort of funny and sort of extreme to sort of very, very disturbing.
Yes.
And unsettling, and you begin to feel unsettled at watching it, like what's going on. That's what happens in Naked Lunch.
Okay. Yeah, and I loved Fear and Loathing. I mean, Terry Gilliam is a really great film director too.
He's got a dark side too.
He does, but like a lot of his movies aren't like fucked up like that. But there's a lot of dark imagery. Like, did you ever watch The Fisher King?
Yeah, that's a messed up movie. A brilliant movie.
Oh, that's such a great movie.
Very disturbing, but also beautiful.
It's very beautiful.
Robin Williams and Bridges, Jeff Bridges are in that. Yeah.
What a great movie.
Probably that was one of the best movies Gilliam ever made, I think.
I think so too. Like, honestly, that and Doctor the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus was really good.
I'm not sure I've seen Dr. Parnassus. I'm a huge fan of Time Bandits. Just because it was, yeah, it came out when I was a kid, and it actually sort of, I think, is fuel for some of my deconstruction of Christianity, the way God is handled in that, and sort of the, you know, I would have thought it was sort of sacrilegious at the time, but I think now when I look at it, it's sort of, it's fuel to add to that deconstruction of spirituality and religion, the way we're taught about it, so.
Let's see. So, I mean, I want to get back on track on some disturbing movies, and all this does tie into being in a simulation because these are all simulated realities.
Yeah, these are. Yes. And I think, yes.
And if I can mention one that really made me unsettled was Salo.
Yeah, that's probably something I'm not going to be able to do.
No, I wouldn't.
Did you watch it sober?
I mean, as sober as I could be in order to watch it. I mean, this is a movie that got the guy killed, you know?
Sure.
I mean, for those of you who don't know what Salo's about or any backstory or anything, it is based off a book called 120 Days in Sodom.
By the Marquette Sade.
By the Marquette Sade. That's right, Jeff. And he wrote some of it with his own shit, and he wrote some of it with his own blood. It's actually where we get the term sadist.
Yes.
So,
and it's a list of, if you read some of it, which I have just because I'm very curious, it's a list of different sexual things that are very extreme. It starts extreme but gets more extreme, and the language it's written in is very, like, I guess the language of the time, so it's odd and sort of funny, but the acts that he's talking about are very extreme.
Yeah, and like the whole story, like, of the book, at least, where, like, all these leader figures gathering these kids around to do fucked up things to them. And in the movie, they modernize it a bit to where it is, where are they at? I guess they're in Italy, and it's like the Nazis who are doing it, and they take them through these three stages of all of it, and they bring in old sex workers, to tell stories of the glory days to get them riled up.
And there's like feces and blood, and Pasolini? Pablo Pasolini. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm just gonna say the last name. And it's about fascism. It's an anti-fascist film, because they're watching some of these acts from afar. So it's like an indictment of the people, but it's also an indictment of people watching it. And it's about fascism and this kind of thing. And it was a very political piece. There's a Criterion version of it, and it's thought to be one of the most disturbing movies ever made.
So, do you mind if I give you one more disturbing movie that I'll watch?
No, definitely. Let's have another one.
We'll have another one. So this one was a documentary, and it's called Titty Cut Follies. Have you ever heard of Titty Cut Follies?
I have. I seems like I have, but I don't. Oh, is it the one about the asylums?
Yes, it's about the conditions in insane asylums in the 60s. And I think the reason that it was the most disturbing to me was because this was real. And I'm pretty sure you see a guy get murdered because they try to force feed him through, like, food through a tube up his nose, and, like, I'm pretty sure he dies. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a thought that maybe the kind of things that you have the tolerance for might be a little higher than what I have the tolerance for. I used to, you know, it's interesting because I think I'm a little tamer now, but when I was in high school, I used to be horrified of any kind of horror movie. Mm-hmm. So
me too.
When I was up till when I was 13 or 14, I mean, even like the old hokey Dracula movies mm-hmm. that were just so bad, I would have nightmares. I couldn't watch them. I was petrified. And then when I hit my teen years, I went to becoming like a horror aficionado, and we would go seek out the goriest, worst horror. Mm-hmm. And so I'll tell you two little examples of they're disturbing, but they're not the most disturbing. Blood Feast was one we sought out.
Okay.
Blood Feast is Herschel Gordon Lewis. Have you seen that?
Mm-mm.
It's sort of where it's basically exploitation. So when people were in the 70s making either pornography, soft porn, nudist movies or whatever, mm-hmm. they started doing super gory, really badly made horror films. And Blood Feast was one of the originals where it was just super gross, but just terrible. I mean, it wasn't scary. It was just about gore, gore, gore.
Right.
And so Herschel Gordon Lewis did that. He did a whole series of films.
Okay.
But a film I saw that really was disturbing was a film called The Gates of Hell, which I think is an Italian director. And this guy sort of vomits up all his intestines, and it stuck with me. It was something I saw, I guess, when I was 16, 17.
Gates of Hell, that sounds so familiar.
Yeah. It's one of those like extreme Italian horror films that I guess they were making in the 70s and 80s. Like, you know, the stuff like...
Yeah. Isn't that like Gallo?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's that kind of thing. You know, it's the real low budget, extra gory, extreme kind of stuff. And then a lot of good movies came out of that, like Suspiria and all the stuff that was happening there that were real classy. But then there was also just a lot of extreme horror that was coming out there. And so that's when I remember that traumatized me, was the Gates of Hell movie.
Okay. I do want to check these out. And yeah, I had a friend that kind of helped me get desensitized to these fucked up movies, because we'd have regularly, it'd be like weekly or biweekly, we'd get together and watch a fucked up movie.
Yeah.
And I think for me, like, and the way that he put it, it makes sense, at least to me, and I've always kind of adopted it, which was knowing that these are movies and that this is simulated and none of it is real, to be able to watch that would help you deal with anything that can actually happen to you in real life, you know?
Sure. And it's an extreme, it's like finding the biggest roller coaster. It's about... Mm-hmm. I think what's the most disturbing thing, and I don't have I'm not about censorship. I'm not about regulating that kind of thing. As long as there's not really a person or an animal being hurt,
mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, there is, it's okay to have extreme kind of films. And I do feel like there's an adrenaline high of, oh, how much can I handle? Or, oh, that's really gross. Or how scared can I be? I think it's part of it. Makes you feel alive, you know. It's sort of a thrill.
And I mean, like, it is in a sense experiencing a simulation, you know. It is experiencing a different reality. And like, I think that happens with everything that we do in life, really. Like, social media is a simulation. Like, none of that is real life.
Yeah.
Even like, and maybe we mentioned it a few episodes back or whatever, but like performative charity, where it's like, oh, he gave this homeless man a meal and some money and got him a haircut, like had to have a camera there. So that was simulated, like, and even in that sense.
Yeah, it's planned. Mm-hmm. And my thought is, it's like reality TV where there's some planning. Like, I'm going to go to this homeless guy and say, hey, I'm going to give you this money. Can we go get you a haircut? And so the homeless guy might get a haircut, and it might be good for him, but it's not real life. It's about creating content.
Yes.
For entertainment, so you can get clicks.
Yep.
And so is it real?
And that,
or is it not real?
The clicks, the likes, the shares, the views.
Yes.
Can be simulated as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, it can be lucrative. And like, I mean, fuck, anything that can be simulated in a sense can be lucrative financially. You know, look at porn.
You know, and you could help somebody that way. So it's possible, like these guys that give a waitress $1,000 tip. If they're really leaving the $1,000 tip, that helps somebody. And so that's great. But they're also giving $1,000 tip because they can use that to get clicks to make $10,000 so that they can do that. So it's like, you know, Mr. Beast funds his all his things with his money. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so is it real or is it not real? Yeah. It's partially real.
It's real, but like, but if there wasn't a camera there and there wasn't anyone watching and it was just you and that individual you were helping, would you actually do it, Mr. Beast?
Right. And that's the thing that to me, if I see a guy in the street and I give him 10 bucks and there's no camera there or anything, it's just a pure act. It has nothing to do with, I need somebody to recognize this and say, oh, what a nice guy. Mm-hmm. You know, you always see these things like, oh, this celebrity gave this money. And it's like, okay, well, that's great. But did you have to like get credit for it? Do you have to have it in the news? Mm-hmm. Is that what's important? So what's really important? Is it the story that makes you look like a good guy? Or is it that you did something?
And that's, I looked this up the other day. It was the term, milkshake duck. I think something like that. It's the sense where someone, gains traction or popularity on social media and then is found out later that they're problematic.
Gotcha.
Like, and I think, what was an example they used? It was, who was it? The guy who did Strange Planet, those comics. Do you know what I'm talking about with the blue people?
Yes.
And they like say things very like literal and like explain fully out. He got some flack when it was found out that like him and his wife were like Christian or something. I don't know, something weird like that, to where it caused controversy online. And I'm trying to even remember where the term came from. It was something about like seeing a duck drink a milkshake, but then finding out that duck is racist.
I would not doubt it.
You know,
ducks are racist. You know, the Rock, one of our listeners, one of our big fans,
shout out to
gave
Dwayne.
Money to the. I think he gave a seven figure donation to the actors guilds or the writers guilds. Mm-hmm. I think that was important that was public. It makes him look good, but I think what it did is it encouraged other actors to give money. And yeah. So sometimes you do something to encourage other people to do it. So yes, it was something that probably makes him look good and does make him or people think he's good. But also I think then other actors were like, we're going to do this too, because we want to support these folks. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was going to take care of like hundreds of, I mean, they use that money to help people that are out of work. And so you can be recognized for a donation and still do very good work.
Right.
But the whole thing is, are you going to do it regardless?
Yeah.
Are you going to do it even if you're not recognized?
Yes. And so that is why, starting today, I'm only going to post me doing bad things to people and do good things without posting it. That's the new
plan. I like that.
Yeah.
It seems like that goes back into our simulation. Is that going to change anything?
Yeah.
Will your reputation go up or go down?
Oh, it will go down because I'm going to film myself pushing down homeless people. I'm going to trick people into paying for my food. Like, hey, that guy.
Now, there was another movie I think we may have talked about called The Devils.
Mm.
Did you tell me about that? Or Devils? Was it? Okay. It's a Ken Russell movie that's supposed to be like one of the most disturbing movies of all time. And I just read the summary of it and I'm like, I'm not watching this. And I can't imagine that it was how it was even made, because it was made by a major studio. But look up The Devils by Ken Russell
and read the summary of that. Yeah. I've read about that, actually. I think it's on my list to watch, yeah.
It's been banned in many places. Mm. It deals with the church. And this is Ken Russell that directed The Who's Tommy and directed, what's that one, Altered States and a lot of weird movies. Yeah. He directed horror. And, I mean, he just... And it's interesting. I just read about that when horror came out, the title was censored. So they couldn't put horror on the movie poster.
Wait, what? Because it was called horrors.
Yeah. I mean, it's so silly today because we just think like, oh, that's tame. But at the time it came out, you couldn't put that on the poster.
No, not at all. So we've talked about bad movies. We've talked about being in a simulation, Jeff.
Yes.
What's going on with your Cronenberg toe? Because you said it was a
mallard. I don't know, man. I said
mallard earlier, and I'm not sure. Because mallard's a duck. You said malady.
Malady.
What's a mallard?
I've got a mallard malady. I might have been bitten on the toe by a duck while I was sleeping.
Oh, no.
There is a duck. There's a duck that stands on the corner and just glares at me. So I'm wondering if this is his doing.
It might be. Now you didn't mention the duck. I mentioned the duck. So, I mean, that planted something.
Yeah, I mean, he's like a bully duck. He just stands on the corner. He glares at me when I go by. You know, flips me the paw or whatever they have, the flipper.
The feather.
And then, yeah, but he's always there. And I'm just wondering if he made it into the house and just... took a nibble of my toe.
So do you think, yeah, because there are some people that are like, that believe like when they see a cardinal, it's like someone watching over them. Is this like the exact opposite of that?
I mean, it's weird that in a city suburb that there's just a duck hanging out on the corner.
I mean, that duck's got work to do, which is bully you, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, how does he live if he's not working? He's always there, just glaring.
You got a mallard malady.
It might actually be a fire hydrant. My glasses are not great, so it's possible that I'm just seeing a fire hydrant every day. But it's a duck or a fire hydrant.
Hey, ducks and fire hydrants look very similar, Jeff, so I get it. It's easy to confuse the two.
You know, We've talked about doing like a I don't know if you want to talk about this now, but we could sort of tease it.
We can tease it.
Maybe we've talked about doing a telethon type episode where we would be raising money for something, and we might have guests, and it would be like we just talk until we can't talk anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's not a
bad idea. That sounds like a really bad idea.
No, I mean, I think it'd be a great live thing, honestly.
We should do a live thing raise money.
But who are we raising money for?
I think we get you your cardigan. We should probably get Tiffy some kind of like gift of some sort just to thank her. And then maybe if we have a little extra, we could throw some into the, it's getting to be holiday season soon. I mean, it's right around the corner.
That's true.
We could throw some in the Salvation Army kettle. I'm a Salvation Army supporter.
You Salvation Army guy?
I'm not again it.
That's fair. I mean, I think a telethon would be fun. I think a live show would be fun. It might be a great way to like wrap up the season.
I think we could. I mean, a live show would be really fun with some audience stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just do a record it, have some questions from the audience.
Yeah.
Bring
people up and see if they want to talk about what's going on in their life.
Yeah. Yeah. We could let them tell us what they think is traumatic.
Yeah.
And then we can laugh at them.
Well, I think the idea wouldn't be to laugh at them, but it would be to collectively laugh at it, the problem. So to speak,
to be together in these different traumas that we go through.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't think we would laugh at someone. They're like, I've been feeling suicidal. I think we would just talk to them. We would make jokes and just help them feel less alone. So
we would talk to them. We would offer them options and support if they needed it.
Yeah.
We could refer them to somebody if they needed it. We're all about healing. We're about sort of talking about sometimes a cesspool we live in, but there are things that come out that are, I mean, these films we're talking about that are disturbing, but there's also beauty in filmmaking and entertainment and comedy and common.
I think disturbing films make people feel alive. And I think all of these things, living in a simulation, talking about bad movies and watching fucked up movies is a way to like embrace it in the sense of like, you couldn't have anything good unless something bad happened. And you couldn't have anything bad unless something good happened before it.
Right. It's the dual nature of life, which is pleasure and pain, love and hate. You cannot have joy without pain, because if you didn't have pain, you would not even know what joy was, because everything would be joyful. So it wouldn't be something you'd appreciate. You'd just be like, oh, this is how we feel. Mm-hmm. So to appreciate the ups, we have to have the downs.
Yep. To suffer is to live.
To suffer is to live. And we would hope that most of life is not suffering, although that's pretty much the first thing of the Buddhists. I mean, that's the first step, is like, life is suffering.
I believe that. I believe life is suffering, but suffering is to live. Like, you learn not to appreciate anything if everything is just going your way. And
I think, and the idea of a simulation, either a really real simulation or the idea that we get into this trance of just doing the same things every day. We take everything for granted, that sometimes it takes something to jar us out of that, to actually look at the, like, talk to our friends, reach out to people that we may should talk to that we haven't talked to for a while, to see what beauty we can find in the world, and to feel something instead of just this sort of, okay, I'm going to just do these things every day and not actually even make decisions. I'm just going to go through the motions of life.
Right. And, you know, I think that is a very beautiful thought, Jeff. And, you know, I think this has reached its logical conclusion.
I think so.
I think we kind of figured out that if we are living in a simulation, that it's okay.
It doesn't change that we're still here.
Yeah. Just because it isn't real if nothing is real, that should give you more of a reason to live, I feel.
Yeah, we're in it together. We're in the simulation together.
Yep, and I wouldn't want to be in a simulation with anyone else.
I would agree.
I think that's about it. So thank you again for listening, and this has been Everything is Traumatic. As always, I'm Tyler.
And I'm Jeff. Yeah, take care of yourself.